5 months after New York's pandemic-related state of emergency was allowed to lapse under then-Governor Andrew Cuomo, Governor Kathy Hochul has issued her own public health disaster declaration in recognition of transmission rates reaching levels not seen since April of 2020 and hospital admissions due to COVID-19 increasing to more than 300 a day. To discuss the current landscape, including the response from the governor, we're joined once again by Dr. Isaac Weisfuss, a medical epidemiologist who was previously responsible for the control of infectious disease in New York City, where he served as a deputy commissioner of health, and is now an adjunct professor at Cornell University's Master's in Public Health program. Welcome back to the show, Doctor.
Thanks for having me.
So, for starters, how would you describe the current state of the pandemic in New York? And is it possible to compare it to previous chapters in this drama, considering, you know, 75% of New Yorkers have now gotten at least one dose of the vaccine, something that we haven't been able to claim at any other point in the pandemic?
We're definitely in better shape than we ever were in the beginning of the pandemic, that's for sure. We have vaccines that will protect people. The medical community has gained a lot of knowledge about how to treat people. There are some promising antivirals on the horizon, as well as monoclonal antibodies. So there's a lot more in our armamentarium to both treat and prevent SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19. So we're definitely much better shaped. There is some worry on a couple of fronts, however. Number one, even though we have a pretty good record of vaccination, there are certainly pockets across the state where there are many unvaccinated people, and the virus is ultimately going to find them. And unfortunately for those individuals, you know, we know that their outcomes are going to be more severe than people who had breakthrough infections. Second issue of concern is relatively new. It's the Omicron discovery in South Africa. It's not clear what this means in terms of transmission and severity, but it's clear that it's going to be here if it's not already here. And there's concern that because of the mutations on that particular variant that are associated with increased transmissibility and increased severity of disease, that that might be an accompanying feature of the Omicron variant. In South Africa, it seems so far that the Omicron variant is sort of pushing out the Delta variant as a big problem. But we don't really know many of the facts yet. But I think it's worthwhile to be at least concerned about it with the assumption that it's already, even though we haven't shown it, that it's already here in some fashion, some place.
In Governor Hochul's executive order declaring a disaster emergency, she used transmission rates and hospital admissions as metrics to justify her formal declaration. Are those the right metrics to be using at this point in the pandemic, considering the vaccination rates are so much higher than they were months ago or even back in April 2020 when we didn't have a vaccine? So does transmission rate make sense? Does hospital admissions make sense?
Well, hospital admissions make sense in the sense that if the hospitals are overstressed, in other words, they have more patients than they can handle, that's going to compromise care for the entire community, not just people with COVID-19, but people with cancer, people with heart disease. And so that is definitely a metric that is always worth looking out for. And when hospitals begin to fill up, especially intensive care unit beds, that's something that should be concerning to everybody. Transmission and vaccination rates are kind of two sides of the same coin at this moment, because one impacts the other. You know, I think it's a combination of transmission and new cases, as well as vaccination rates, that are really probably the key metrics at this point in time.
Another metric we hear a lot about is the rate of positivity of COVID tests. Is that a meaningful metric to use, considering that the people who are getting tested are people who may suspect that they've been exposed or they might have symptoms, and it's not really representative of the population?
Sometimes it can be really difficult to interpret those numbers, although they're certainly interesting and they're certainly related to what's going on in the community. But there's a couple of issues that have crept in. Number one, rates of testing may change over time, and the people who are more concerned may likely get more tested. Second, there's a lot of home testing kits out there, and none of those really get reported. So there's a whole segment of the testing population that for which we don't really have any data. So it's interesting and it's useful. It has waxed and waned as a useful indicator. In the beginning, it wasn't, because there were so few test kits out there that only people with severe illness got tested. And so it was not really a good indicator of what was happening in the community. And then that was resolved to some degree. And now there's this home test kit issue where you can buy them or go into a pharmacy and get tested. And it's not clear that many of those are being reported. So I think it's still interesting. And it's still something that I look at. But, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt at this stage.
So like the way Governor Cuomo back in, I think, the spring of 2020 used 1% positivity rates as this gold standard doesn't necessarily apply today when we're looking at, say, a testing percentage positivity for the 7-day average of about like 4.1% statewide. We shouldn't necessarily think things are four times worse right now.
Again, I think we need to view it in the context of all the other data. So I don't think as a standalone measure, it's, you know, the key element. I mean, I think that also testing frequency changes over time. And so you have to look at, you know, who's getting tested and to what frequency testing is occurring in a local area to better understand those numbers. So I still think it's useful, but I think it may be that it's most useful in the context of the other things that are going on as well.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Dr. Isaac Weisfuss, a medical epidemiologist who is an adjunct professor at Cornell University's Master's in Public Health program. So prior to the formal statewide state of emergency declared by the governor, the Erie County executive reinstituted a mask mandate for all indoor public spaces, regardless of vaccination status in Erie County. This action came after the region began experiencing record number of cases and hospitals that were reportedly more than 90% full. Based on what they're responding to, does it seem like that type of action was overdue in Western New York, or are they implementing the proper restrictions at the proper time?
You know, the trajectory of their problem has to be taken into account. Mm-hmm. So if it's rapidly rising, one could argue that at 90% capacity, they're going to be over that. If it's a slow rise, then it was on time. So I think sometimes the issue of when your intervention, was it in time or not, is somewhat that you can answer retrospectively. But I think 90% is certainly the red flag going up to say, you know, we've got a problem here, and if we don't start putting in some interventions to decrease new cases, we're going to be overrun.
As of Monday, November 29th, Governor Kathy Hochul has indicated that she's not going to reimpose a broad mask mandate across the state, one that would apply to vaccinated New Yorkers in public spaces. Based on the rates of transmission that you're seeing and the hospitalization rates you're seeing in terms of how rapidly they're increasing, whether it's steep or slow increase, do you think there's still time to implement a mask mandate like the one that she's balking at this point, or is it time to implement a statewide one?
You know, I think the whole situation is sort of up in the air because of the Omicron issue. So it might be useful to provide a mandate or strong suggestion for everybody in an indoors setting to wear a mask. And as I said, you know, it may be some regions are worse than others, and we just don't know really right now about the Omicron, you know, issue, except for the fact that we should assume that it's here in some place in some fashion. So, you know, there's always the question, if you mandate something, how meaningful is that versus people who, you know, are going to, you know, make their own judgments. I do think it's an important statement. I think that New York City just came out with a statement asking for everybody to mask indoors. And I think in this time period, it's probably, you know, a good thing to do.
New York City has also had restrictions tied to a person's vaccination status. For example, you need to show proof of a COVID vaccination in order to eat indoors at a restaurant. Should this approach be utilized more broadly and across more of the state?
You know, I think every region is different in terms of people's attitudes. I do think it should be done across the state. But, you know, in some areas that may be sort of more difficult to enforce. And so, it's a tough call, and it may be more on a regional level. But the issue is, I think people should carry around their vaccine cards and show it, you know, when they want to go into a restaurant or perhaps some other facility.
It's interesting to hear you talk about attitudes and the challenges of implementation. It seems like what you're acknowledging is that the realities of implementing a public health policy aren't necessarily in line with what would be the best practices if public health officials got to run the state and local governments, right?
Yeah, I'm not advocating, although I might like it, I'm not advocating for public health officials to run the state. I think that you have to acknowledge that people are really tired of this whole thing. And when it comes to people's livelihoods, those are certainly important. When it comes to children going to school, that's certainly important. You know, we're not in the same situation that we were in March, April, May of 2020, where there was, great deal of uncertainty, a great deal of morbidity, mortality. So we're in a space that we can take more of those factors into account. And, if people are not going to, obey those orders, it becomes somewhat of a moot point. At this stage in the pandemic, I think we all have to be flexible on some of these issues. Personally, when I go indoors, I always wear a mask, outside of my house, of course. So it's just a reflex I carry around in my pocket and just put it on. It's not such a big deal. I do think it's a balancing act in terms of public health mandates versus what the public will tolerate and comply with.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Isaac Weisfuss, a medical epidemiologist who was previously responsible for the control of infectious disease in New York City, where he served as a deputy commissioner of health.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
In case you're just joining us, we're continuing our conversation about the state of the pandemic, and our guest is Dr. Isaac Weisfuss, a medical epidemiologist who was previously responsible for the control of infectious disease in New York City, where he served as a deputy commissioner of health, and is now an adjunct professor at Cornell University's Master's in Public Health program. As part of the governor's official disaster declaration, she's enabling her health department to limit non-essential, non-urgent procedures in hospitals that have a less than 10% staffed bed capacity left. Lee Zeldin, the Republican hopeful for governor, has argued that this will result in massive negative consequences to public health. The latest entrant into the Democratic primary for governor, Tom Suozzi, has also said this is a mistake. What do you think of restricting the types of procedures that people can get right now to ensure there are open hospital beds for potential COVID patients? Is that kind of flexibility smart right now?
I think, first of all, I think that she was offering that as an option. I don't know that she was mandating it across the state.
For areas that pop up where they have the hospital bed situation and then at the discretion of the Department of Health.
I think it's just a way, and I think her other orders were a way of increasing the flexibility of her ability to act or ability of county executives to act across the state. And so you saw along with that, there were other administrative things that were waived that allow them to do purchasing and in a easier manner, for example. So I think I think it depends on the situation. I do think that, getting these elective surgeries are important, but if your hospital is truly overrun with patients and there isn't any place to put them, you've run out of ICU beds and surgical ICU beds, then, it would make sense not to do the elective surgeries at that stage. So I think it just gives hospitals and the government some flexibility in case in a given location, perhaps such as Erie County, that hospital overrun occurs.
And in talking about this, you specifically made a point to highlight the nuance in the disaster declaration in terms of how and when it applies, something that has not been the case for people who have been critical of this, because they've basically argued, oh, no, this is a complete ban on elective procedures, which it's obviously not, which we've talked about. And some of the media coverage as well has kind of glossed over the nuances involved in this declaration. As someone who is so obviously invested in the facts of not only the crisis, but the facts of the response, how frustrating is this for you to watch unfold?
Well, I think you always have to, you know, meet these concerns with the facts. And the facts are that these steps that the New York State government and the governor have taken allow them more flexibility in the next couple of months to respond to a problem. I think that that is probably a wise thing to have in your back pocket. Again, I think it only applied till the middle of January, mm-hmm. so it wasn't a continued thing. And I think that unfortunately, you know, these issues have become very politicized, and people see things as a right or wrong lens. I see this as just allowing the state to have some extra flexibility to do what they need to do if things were to get, you know, worse in certain areas, or if the Omicron variant is more transmissible or more severe. I'm not sure I would call it a subtlety or a nuance. I think that that's the kind of thing that people would understand and appreciate if they, you know, were told exactly what it is and what it isn't. So I think that the public would understand intuitively that, and it's a shame that it may be portrayed as something different.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with Dr. Isaac Weisfuse, a medical epidemiologist who is an adjunct professor at Cornell University's Masters in Public Health program. Well, speaking of the politicalization of the pandemic and the response to the pandemic, the state attorney general, who's also a gubernatorial hopeful, issued her own, I guess, call to action prior to the governor declaring a state of emergency. And she said taking these steps would stop the spread of COVID-19. And this included using the state's purchasing power to buy more home tests, engaging in more outreach to vaccine hesitant communities, and paying people $200 a pop to get vaccinated. As you hear those ideas, think about those ideas, do these seem like policies that would be significant game changers in New York's pandemic approach, or do they seem to just represent ideas, I guess, tinkering around the margins?
You know, I think there's a mixture here in the Attorney General's approach. Some of these are things that we should do more of, but, are not game changers in and of themselves, mm-hmm. but just things that we ought to beef up, like using trusted community leaders. That's always a good strategy. Census-style outreach outside major cities makes sense. So some of these are not really game changers, but they're good recommendations. You know, perhaps the one is using state buying power for home testing. The issue is not only purchasing the tests, but how to, you know, distribute them and allow them. So I think that's probably the strongest recommendation that gets to that game-changing strategy.
For most of the pandemic, nursing homes have been very difficult to get into after the early days when it seems like everybody mm-hmm. could still get into them. At this point, Governor Hochul has indicated that she doesn't plan on making them more restrictive in terms of who can and can't visit. Does that seem like a mistake to you, considering the past that nursing homes have had? Or because of vaccines and because of boosters, is this a different sort of situation than in the past, and she's handling it correctly?
I think it's different than in the past. In the past when we didn't have any interventions, really, mm-hmm. aside from an infection control, that was, you know, one set of problems. Now, hopefully everybody in the nursing home, whether they are staff or residents, are vaccinated. And I do think it's probably useful to ask that visitors be vaccinated as well. So I think that's as best as you can do, along with some periodic testing, especially if there happens to be a case that is there. And so I think that, you know, balancing out all the needs of the residents and the staff, I think that's the best thing, a good balancing act. Now, if staff are not vaccinated, that is another set of problems, and that has to be, you know, discussed and encouraged for people to get vaccinated.
And finally, it's less than a week since New Yorkers gathered with family and friends for the Thanksgiving holiday and then have since dispersed potentially throughout the rest of the state and even throughout the rest of the country. When do you think we're going to start seeing an uptick in cases from the Thanksgiving holiday? And do you think there will be a noticeable one, or is this just going to be a gradual incline?
I think, you know, we're in this holiday period now, and I think that we are going to have an increase. I think it's going to be way muted compared to last year, where we had just a, you know, horrific increase during the winter. So I think it's going to happen. I think, you know, if, you know, as I view from November through New Year's Day as, you know, one time period in the sense of having, you know, lots of people getting together. So I think from the Thanksgiving holiday, you know, you got to give it, you know, sort of 2 weeks to see if there's an, you know, truly an increase or not. But I think the whole time period is one of concern. However, I think, and I think there will be a bump up, especially in certain communities, as a, you know, my thought is that the virus, if you're not vaccinated, the virus is going to find you, whether you like it or not. And, you know, so we will see a bump up, but it's going to be muted compared to last year.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Isaac Weisfuss. He is the former Deputy Commissioner of Health for New York City and now an adjunct professor at Cornell University's Master's in Public Health program. Dr. Weisfuss, thanks again for making the time. Really appreciate it.
Okay, my pleasure.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.